Incoming transmission.
The Klingonese phrase of the day is
Asha Ve.
These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise.
So, this is a huge victory for the good guys.
Scotty, beam me up.
Resistance is futile.
Live long and prosper.
Boldly go where no man has gone before.
Podcast, the show covering the entire Star Trek franchise in chronological order for fans new and old. I'm your host, writer-comedian Mr. Todd A. Davis. Trekkers around the world, please welcome back Computer Resume Podcast's record holder for the longest recording session at 6 hours and 8 minutes. You can catch her performance June 1st at Trek Long Island, Crashing My Computer and Breaking Hearts, as the Trek Queen of New York City.
New York City!
It's Flip Kiki.
Yay!
Hi, hi. Hi, Trekkies.
How are you, love?
I'm good. My warp core is primed and I'm ready to fly.
Woo! Oh, man. Let's go back to our first interaction with each other. And after we had that wonderful, wonderful discussion, I said, listen, restrictions off. If you want to call dibs on any episode, and I barely got the sentence out, and you were like, Serene Squall, you give me
it's
that episode.
It's true. I do know what I like, and I know what I want. And no, this is the first time I saw this episode. I will talk about this episode at any chance, any opportunity. Nice. I love the episode as a whole. I love so many of the individual character moments. We get so many good moments for the entire cast. And then I don't want to talk too much about them quite yet, but the Captain Angel of it all, because once I get started there, that's where we're staying.
Yes,
but yeah,
absolutely.
There's so much to love about this episode. There's a mutiny, a ship takeover. Chapel kicks ass with a hypo spray.
Right.
Una and Pike just like lock them in a jail cell every episode and just let them like have fun.
Yes.
Like, comedy, the light. Oh,
there's a lot to unpack with this episode, but let's rewind a little bit because it has been a while since we've talked here officially on the show. And this is your first episode with us covering Strange New Worlds. So let's go back to the premiere of Strange New Worlds. You being a lifelong Trekker, fair to say. What were your initial thoughts about this new show that is steeped in so much nostalgia, but like bringing all of these strange new things into center focus in Strange New Worlds? What were your initial thoughts upon seeing the series?
Honestly, I was on board from the petition. You know, we've been demanding this series since we met Pike, Una, and Spock in Discovery. I think that Anson Mount, Rebecca Ramon, and Ethan Peck are perfectly cast. Their chemistry was undeniable. So when I found out the series had gotten greenlit, I just couldn't wait. And then when it was on, no notes. Like, I was so happy about every choice they made. There was nothing for me where I was like, oh. I was like, no, I'm down. This is fun. I love the new characters. La'an is such a standout. I love her so much. I love the way they're handling Chapel and Uhura and now Kirk and Scott. Like, I love how we're getting to know the characters that we love, and we're seeing how they crossed paths and were introduced to these new characters, Pike's crew and his ship, and how it's so different from Kirk's Enterprise, but you still see the through line. I think it's just it's a really good lesson in storytelling of how to do Star Trek at its best, episodic, fun adventures, but rich and strong character arcs. And I think finding the balance between those two things is why Strange New Worlds caught me so quickly.
Yeah, I think, you know, with the extensive introduction to at least Pike in Discovery Season 2, we were all kind of, yeah, we are sold on him as a leading man. And if there was any doubt, I think him reading the famous paragraph, space, the final frontier, yada, 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 over that wonderful Jeff Russo rendition of the original theme. If there was any doubt, by the time the credits were done rolling, you were on board and you're a fan. But yeah, right off the bat, it was all familiar and new. And we're getting more of that, it seems like, every episode, where it buckle up, because there's no telling. It could be, you know, we get a medieval setting, we get a horror movie setting, we get a romantic comedy, and now we get the pirates. And this episode, I was so captivated by Captain Angel and trying to figure out what's going on. And then even everything that's happening on Enterprise, let's not forget the rest of the crew over on the Serene Squall and everything that's happening there. So let's try to steer clear of spoilers for the moment. And let's get into initial thoughts about this episode, the Serene Squall, you know, overarching thoughts about the character, the design, the narrative, and the overarch, and how it all ties in these characters that we know so well. What are your thoughts on Serene Squall?
Well, going in, for me, the stakes were high, personally, because at that point we already had been let in on the fact that there was going to be a non-binary character in Dr. Aspen, a counselor, which the second I read that and I think it was on Trek News, like before the episode had aired, mm-hmm. I was excited for so many reasons. As a queer person, seeing more queer representation in Star Trek is just so meaningful for me. Yeah. And it's been a long time coming. You know, they've tried in the past. In TNG, we had The Outcast, which attempted to tell a queer story. In DS9, we had Rejoined, which is a beautiful episode, and it was trying to do something as well. It just wasn't quite the right time and the right place. I don't think TV viewers, executives, higher-ups were where they needed to be to let the stories be told as nakedly as they need to be. I'm a real big advocate for less queer coding and more queer stories. So when I heard non-binary character, I got so excited. And then I was like, counselor? Like, we haven't seen a counselor really since Deanna and Esri. Like, those are the only two. And it's like, mental health is such a conversation that we've been having as a culture for the last decade, really specifically. Mm-hmm. And so I think any chance to speak on that is also important, and that therapy matters, taking care of our minds as well as our body matters. So I was excited to meet a counselor. I was like, yeah, I am for this. Like, I don't need to know any more to be interested in this episode. Yeah. And then the episode happened and I was like, oh, even beyond my wildest expectations and wildest dreams.
Yeah. And in looking at the presentation of a counselor, I think we may have even, and I'll put myself in this category, maybe had some preconceptions about what a counselor or psychiatrist would look like or how they would carry themselves. And, it became clear to me very quickly, no, they can be just as diverse. They are just as diverse as anything else. So, you know, it's not just one simple thing. Like, the humanity, life in this galaxy is not cookie cutter. It's there's somebody out there for everyone, and everyone is different. Every journey is different. And being a counselor with a background in, you know, someone who may have had a rough life, or someone who may have had different life experience than you, that doesn't devalue their insight and their help. In fact, I think it raises it. I think that would be fresh perspective on what someone's going through. And God, we all need that. That fresh perspective to kind of hit reset and give a fresh look at the game board and really be able to assess what's going on and how do I proceed?
I think for me, like when I think of therapy, what I'm, you know, every time I've gone to counseling or had counseling, I realize that what I'm looking for is an outside perspective. I know my problems. I've looked at them and sometimes I can solve them myself. Sometimes it's like, okay, this one I can know. But sometimes I run into a problem that I don't know how to solve. I need an outside perspective. Who better to give you an outside perspective than someone who has experienced the outside, who yes. has come from such a different life experience that they would have learned lessons that you wouldn't have learned, that they might have gone through things and experienced things to give them a perspective. So I think it's really smart that we saw a counselor that was obviously unlike anyone we'd ever met before, really.
Yeah.
And that that didn't make them less qualified. It actually makes them more qualified. They can see things from different points of view. There's an early conversation in the episode where they discuss why they left Starfleet, why they left the Federation. And yes. it wasn't out of a desire to shun those institutions or those organizations. It was out of a desire that I could do more by approaching it as a civilian from a different angle. And that is the sign of a true problem solver, is that like, if I can't get at it from this angle, I'll find another angle. And we find out through this episode that this character, if nothing else, they're good at finding new angles to approach an issue or a problem.
Yes. And funnily enough, I'm glad you phrased it that way. We get to see some natural 20s rolled in terms of charisma and persuasion on the part of Captain Pike, as he is also trying to convince the crew of the Serene Squall to do or not do certain things. So while the crews are in different states of disarray, we'll say, a very similar game is being played on both ships. And it's fascinating to watch these very, very smart, very capable people on both sides play the game against each other. And I love it. I just love it.
This episode definitely, this is three-dimensional chess that is being played by all characters. There's no, like, I hope everyone's rested. I hope everyone's got their, like, had their full 8 hours that they're bright-eyed and bushy-tailed today.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's a hostile takeover. There's pirates. There's, like, lives at stake. It's like, yeah, this isn't going to be one of those easy days at work. And we see that through all the characters. They all get to shine. Nurse Chapel has some amazing moments of physicality, which at that point, you know, now we're through season two of Strange New Worlds. We know a lot about this character,
yeah.
her service in the Klingon War. Mm-hmm. We didn't know this yet. It had been hinted at, but to see her in action specifically, it was great for me. Spock is doing more internal work, which yes. is, I love, because it's like, well, there's a counselor on board. Let's do some counseling. Mm-hmm. And we even do that. Like, there's a whole scene where he's basically in therapy.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I love that. It's like, yeah, let's use everything that you've got, use it. And I think this episode does a really good job. There's no thread not pulled. And for that for this to be like, it still blows my mind that this is one episode, it's not a two-parter, because so much happens in this episode, so much is revealed in this episode, so many turns are taken, and yet there's also moments of like the characters having quiet conversations. Like, it's not just like bam bam bam. The pacing throughout is it's a tango, it's a dance, it's a back and it's a forth, and that is played across through so many characters to create this overarching, like, plot A, plot B, plot C cannot be separated. They are, it's really, really good writing.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, you mentioned the fact that it's kind of a surprise that it's not a two-parter. I think back to our coverage of the episode, Lift Us Where Suffering Cannot Reach, and the exploration of the first servant and how that society relies on sacrificing a child. In my discussion with Lego builder Thomas Fletcher, who is also a parent, and we discussed, what could you do for your child? What would you not be willing to do for your child? What, you know, all of those things. And we came to the conclusion, paramount, please hear us. please bring back Short Treks, because these episodes have these little nuances that have to be explored. And maybe you're counting on us to do the exploring, and that's fine, but we want more of these characters, and we want more exploration of these strange new worlds and the inhabitants of those worlds and the psychology of those people and the after effects of their interactions. It's such rich storytelling, and you absolutely nailed it, Flip. It's such great storytelling. And I can tell we are chomping at the bit to dive into this episode. But before we get there, let's get to...
I'm going to be taking over in true Captain Angel fashion. So set phasers for fun and spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert.
This sector is the Quadrant's version of the Wild Wild West.
These pirates are outsiders. It's best to steer clear.
Looks like a net made of lasers.
Recommend we do not cross one of the beams.
What happens if we do?
Kaboom.
That does not sound good.
I don't like this.
Hold your fire!
Battle station!
We've taken your ship. Cage your crew. I asked for codes turned into lockdown.
So we'll discuss it over dinner.
So to catch you guys up on what happened, we had Starfleet counselor Dr. Aspen traveling with the Enterprise to a far-flung colony under attack from the Serene Squall, a rogue ship of space pirates.
Sucks!
Pike and an away team transport over to the Serene Squall the same time as the crew boards the Enterprise. Dun dun dun!
Great!
Pike uses his culinary skills and some manipulative tactics to encourage a mutiny on the Serene Squall, allowing him and his boarding party to gain control of the ship.
Sneaky, sneaky, sir.
Dr. Aspen reveals themselves to actually be Angel, Captain Angel, of course, of the Serene Squall. Dun, dun, dun! They contact T'Pring and give her an ultimatum. Release Angel's lover, a Vulcan prisoner that T'Pring is attempting to rehabilitate, or Spock dies.
Ooh, that's interesting.
T'Pring chooses to hand the prisoner over, but Spock stops her by pretending to break their engagement and claiming to be having an affair with none other than Nurse Christine Chapel.
Oh my.
Angel tries to fire on T'Pring's ship, but the away team uses remote access codes to lock Enterprise's controls.
Sneaky, sneaky, sir.
Angel flees, and the pirates surrender.
And there was much rejoicing.
Spock reassures T'Pring of his love for her and tells Chapel that their friendship is strictly platonic.
Yeah, right.
He also reveals to Chapel that Angel's lover is his half-brother, the one and the only Cybok. Dun, dun, dun!
Brought to you in part by our Patreon supporters, Rev J, Jerry Antimano, Cosmic Crit, Kitty B, David Willett, Ed Milner, Fleet Admiral First Class Fred Sims, and Ren. Space Monkey 73 and Steph Overman.
Hi, this is Connor Trenier from Star Trek Enterprise. You are listening to the Computer Resume podcast.
Okay, so now we are in spoiler territory. So let's get into it. You know what? You took over. Give us your thoughts. Give us your feelings. Give it to us, Flip.
Well, as I already mentioned, I knew a little bit about this episode going in. I'd heard about the casting, the character. Mm-hmm. I had heard about the casting, but I'm going to be honest. The name Jesse James Keitel didn't mean too much for me as far as TV film, because I knew them as a nightlife performer here in New York City years ago. Yeah. And it was more just like they're acting now. In anticipation of this episode, I did some research and I found that she was a character on the reboot of Queer as Folk. And I started watching that and I was suddenly like obsessed. And I'm like, oh, I can't wait to see Jesse James Keitel rock Star Trek's world. Cause I was like, oh, this is going to be fun. Cause you see in interviews, you see through her other work, just every actor brings a flavor to what they do.
Oh, yeah.
And when I was watching her, I was like, oh, I'm interested to see how this translates into a Star Trek character.
Mm.
And she did not disappoint. When we met Dr. Aspen, I immediately was interested. I found them fascinating just immediately. Mm-hmm. And as the episode progressed, so many things to talk about there, the counseling, the intellect, the just the point of view that they brought. Mm. And I have to say it, Catsuit. We have Catsuits, love them or hate them, agree with them or not. I myself, I'm going to say it here, I'm going to say it now, and I apologize for my crudeness. I love a fierce bitch in a catsuit. Always have, always will. I'm a gay man. It's just who I am. And I love that Jesse James Keitel was willing to do it, or maybe she requested, I don't know. But I'm like, I kind of do want to know. I'm like, you know you look fierce, right? And a cat suit, because I feel like I would have demanded a cat. It's like, I want a cat suit and I want it now. Like, I want to be that bitch in Star Trek. I want to be a cat suit girl.
Oh, yeah.
And then that aside, it's not just, you know, about the eye candy and the amazing fashion. Such a rich character.
Yeah.
Such an amazing portrayal, period. And then to realize this is our first trans actor in Star Trek. Yep. It's our first, not our first. There is a binary character in a non-binary character in Discovery, Adira.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So there's more. Now, like, if you're non-binary, you don't only have one character to look at. Now there are two that you can, like, pick and choose. Which one speaks to me? As a queer person, I'm going to say it here and now. Dr. Aspen / Captain Angel is the first time I saw myself. I finally saw a character that I was like, oh, yeah, that speaks to me.
Wow.
Because in the past, it's like, well, who would I be? Mm. I don't want to cut my hair and be all militaristic like the Starfleet officers. Because in the 90s, that's kind of what we were given, was very clean cut, very. And I'm like, that's not who I am. And so my whole life, I'm like, I guess I would be a civilian if I were, like, I wouldn't get to go out and have fun and explore and be out there doing crazy stuff as who I am. But then Captain Angel, I was like, oh, that's an option. I could do that. I get to flirt. I could flirt with Spock, and I could take over the Enterprise and wear a cat suit. It was like one of those moments of like, yeah, I want to be that when I grow up. Like, the little Trekkie inside of me was like, yes. And I just find that so fulfilling. And I'm so grateful, because I can only imagine, I say that it speaks to the young Trekkie in me to know that there are actual young Trekkies, new Trekkies, who have this example, who have this fun character. In my mind, we were, the second it was revealed that she was the pirate captain, I was like, oh, I thought she was just fierce and a counselor. She's a femme fatale. They are serving femme fatale realness.
Yes.
And she's not even a she.
That's right. Yeah.
She's a they.
Yeah.
You can break all the rules and still be this. Oh, I love it.
Yes.
It's just really inspiring. And it's really good to see. It's powerful. It also says a lot that from one episode, I am able, you know, through my Star Trek drag, I love to channel characters. I love to perform as characters.
Yes.
Most of the characters are main cast members, because that's where you have the most material. You can really come up with numbers. I was able to produce a full tribute show as Captain Angel from one episode. That's how richly they wrote this character.
Yeah.
And I find that so fulfilling and satisfying as an audience member, who this character is meant to represent me and my community in a way. Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, you did it. You're doing it. Work.
There is a fascinating, because, you know, we talked before we started rolling about, I myself do not claim to know or be in the loop of any particular thing. I love to observe. I love to listen. I love to learn and grow. And I feel like this episode for me gave me the prompting to seek out more, to seek out this new life and find out more and learn more. And, you know, there is a fascinating, talking about, I'm going to do my best to try to stay on point, because, you know, both of us can get lost in this discussion really quickly. But there is a fascinating look at the wardrobe choices of Captain Angel. And it's on Paramount Plus. It's part of the, you know, sort of special feature clips thing. But they get into why those choices were, and, you know, the choice of the director and the choice of the actor and the choice of the costumer, I believe. And it's rare that they all aligned, and they all aligned on the cat suit. So yeah, it's, you know, when you've got such a rich character, those choices get informed very quickly, and they're almost kind of no-brainers of like, yeah, this person's going to go in this direction. And, yeah, you know, the things start to fall in place. But yeah,
yeah,
this is a very important episode besides being the fun pirate episode. There's a lot going on here.
Yeah, there really is. And I think I must have watched that when season one was airing, because I was like, that I knew that and we did talk about this before we were filming. I knew that Captain Angel had been a collaborative effort between production and Jesse James Keitel and Wardrobe. So I was like, oh, I must have watched that. Because that's why I was like, I feel like I definitely wish I had reviewed that. I watched the episode like three times for this, and then I didn't even think to go and watch any of the special behind the scenes stuff, because I kind of forget they're on Paramount Plus. I'm so old school that I'm used to my like DVD box sets that have the special features. Yes. And I forget that they're on Paramount Plus now, which, plug out to them for like making sure that those are on the servers as well, because they, to quote a great millennial, like, if you're only watching the show, you're only getting half the story. It's like the behind the scenes tidbits reinforce what's going on the screen a lot of the times, especially in this case where you have such a standout guest star and standout character. It's easy to do some stunt casting and be like, we're going to have a non-binary character. It's going to be a trans actor. It's going to be great. Yay, we did it. But every department was like, no, we're all going to, like, wardrobe, the writers, the makeup, the hair, everything was just like, she came to slay. And she did.
I think it's important to look at the fact that not only did all of these departments bring support and bring this character to life, but when you step back and look at the show as a whole, you think, oh, they did that for all of them. They put in this much care and thought into every little aspect of this show. And I think that's part of what makes this show arguably best in the franchise. I know it's on a lot of people's top fives, probably top three. And
I would definitely, and it's, I was literally thinking that as you were saying it, so I'm so glad you got to it, because I was going to say, and I don't mean that this is a unique experience for this episode. They bring their A game to every episode. They do, every department. I just found it fulfilling that, I'm going to say it, as a queer audience member, we've been getting the short end of the stick for a long time. And I love that they didn't drop the ball for that. They were like, every episode matters. Every beat matters. Yeah. They do. They kill it every episode. And it's just, it's even more inspiring that they killed it for this one too, specifically. Like, they stuck the landing in a way that not only is expected because of the caliber of the show that they do, but it was also necessary because of the story and the character they were creating.
Yes.
I found myself halfway through the episode when it's revealed their villainous side. My first thought was like, did we just get our new Sela or our new Seska? Or I want that. Like, I want them. I really need this character to be recurring, because I'm like, talk about being left wanting more. Yeah. And that's even without the connection to Spock's brother. But that makes me want it even more, because I'm like, oh, they didn't need to do that. That this character would have stood on its own, on their own. I mean, this character would have stood on their own, but then tying it into that story makes it even more. It's like, oh yeah. 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 Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we've talked a lot about Captain Angel, Dr. Aspen. We've talked a lot about them on the counselor side, and I'm glad you brought up their turn to villain. There's a quote from Jesse James Keitel I want to read. I understand that queer people have had a really long and complicated history with TV and film, and they've been very mistreated in the media. That being said, I think it's high time we let queer people be villains. Let's talk about the nature of being the villain. Star Trek, for its great heroic characters of every shape and size, they've had a lot of really interesting villains as well. And of course, a lot of people point to Khan as sort of the quintessential iconic villain. And, you know, rightly so, it ended up there. It was a pivotal episode, which, you know, tied into a groundbreaking blockbuster movie. So that's all well and good. But looking at Khan, I felt like his plan was so one-sided and so motivated by revenge to a point where, okay, we've got him in our sights. And then what are you going to do? And then what? Like, okay, let's say you do kill Kirk. Then what? You're one ship. Like, Starfleet still outnumbers you. But, you know, looking at the villains in, or the villain specifically at the end of Enterprise, played by Peter Weller, who had this big overarching plan and was dangerously close to being successful. Now we come to this villain, Captain Angel, who is motivated by her emotions, but there is a deeper thing happening here. I've set the stage enough. Let's talk about Captain Angel, Dr. Aspen, as a villain.
They're so rich. There's so much motivation that's explained. It's so easy when you're doing episodic television to just have your baddie of the week. And yes, all you need to know is that you got to beat them. That's all you really need to know. Yep. And it's true. That is all you need to know if you want to be lazy about it. And as we've already established, Strange New Worlds is many things. Lazy is not one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And they delivered with this rich villain. And it's almost hard to refer to them as a villain. They're definitely not doing the best things, but they're doing, you can tell that they're doing what they think they have to do.
Yeah.
And it's not just for themselves, it's for love.
Yeah.
And there's that quote that's been going around, a hero will sacrifice their love for the greater good.
Mm.
A villain will protect their love at all costs. So it's almost like,
wow,
it's so romantic. It's like, it might not be the right thing to do. It might make them a villain, but the second love enters the chat, you've got to admit, like, what wouldn't you do for love? Where is that line? Yeah. When do you become a villain? And does someone tell you? Does someone tell you you crossed the line? Or do you just think you're skirting that line still? Like, I find that so fascinating. And I think Angel shows that so well. And so there's so many lines that they are given where Spock points out their deceit. And they fire back, I never lied about who I am. And it's true.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, they fudged a few details here and there, which I even think that they say that. Like, I may have fudged a few details here and there, but I never lied about who I am. That's actually, I think, the exact line.
Yeah.
Because I performed it, so I know it.
Of course.
And it's true. It's like, that's what makes such a fascinating villain, is when your hero and your villain could actually sit down and have a conversation for any length of time and never really prove each other right or wrong. It's like, it's all about the angles. It's all about how you look at it.
Yeah.
We're not in Federation space. We're not in Starfleet's jurisdiction.
Yep.
They're out on the frontier. They're on her. I have to stop misgendering this character. We're on their turf.
Yeah.
So why not play by their rules?
Yeah. It makes me think of...
It creates like an interesting gray area. Mm-hmm. And I will say, I love this episode for how it does explore so many gray areas. I also love that it took this character, who is an outsider in so many ways, they're a pirate, they are living outside of Federation space, to look at one of the most iconic Star Trek characters in a way that they're not looked at very often. And of course, I'm talking about Spock. This episode explores Spock in a way that I found very refreshing. I feel like that character, he's often approached from the point of view of Vulcans, who see him as too human.
Mm-hmm.
And then by his human crewmates, who are almost pressuring him to be more human. Like, well, remember, you can have him. Like, no one's asking him who he is. They're all telling him who he is.
Yeah.
And I actually do have a line that I want to cite from the episode.
Yeah.
Because I found it so brilliant that the writers wrote this for Spock. And I also found it so brilliant that they had it spoken by someone that comes from the trans experience, because they are speaking about being Vulcan or human, that battle.
Mm.
But when you think about it from the gender debate point of view that we're having constantly in our real world,
mm-hmm.
it's such a powerful message. And what they said is, you know, all species put things into boxes. You're either this or you're that. And sometimes we act a certain way to fit people's expectations, but that's not necessarily who we are. And that's the biggest message from this episode. Yeah. One of the last lines the character speaks is to Spock before they beam off the Enterprise. And it is, you've been asking what you are, but you need to be asking who you are.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's such a powerful message, not just for Spock, but for anyone.
Yeah.
Not just a queer individual, not just a trans individual, every individual. That's our mission statement in life, is to discover who we are, not what people tell us we are, not what labels we are given, but who we are once you take that off of us.
Yeah.
And I just love that that's how this was expressed, and that's who expressed it. It gives the message such a powerful landing.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Going back to the idea of the presentation of hero and villain, looking at the perception of who and what a hero or a villain is. I know the redefinition of a hero came September 11th. I think everyone stepped back and tried to figure out, there's a redefinition of hero. And then not too long later, we redefined it again of what is a villain. And I know in my own life, without getting into too many personal details, but I know that there are people who in my personal life would probably consider me the villain. And that's a hard thing to accept. That is a hard thing to deal with. It is hard to accept the role of villain if placed in that situation. And it also made me think of, because I've been kind of going back and rewatching some a few key things here and there. I think of the discussions between Patrick Stewart as Professor Charles Xavier and Ian McKellen as Magneto, and those interactions where they're both right. Part of what makes Magneto such a great villain is that you see his point of view and he's not wrong. And it's, those things are tough to deal with, especially when the people who view you as a villain have the same last name or same blood. That stuff's really tough. And I know I'm not touting myself as the only person who experiences that. I'm sure there's so many people who, for one reason or another, are quote unquote the villain.
I think that's what makes this character so impactful.
Yeah.
Is that, yes, it is a moment for a specific type of representation.
Mm-hmm.
But the writers took that opportunity to also let it be an invitation.
Yes.
Like, this character is representing a community,
mm-hmm.
but they're also inviting other people to see their perspective.
Mm. Yeah.
So it's not a space where you have to feel like you're not allowed to relate. You should, because at the end of the day, it's a human experience.
Human experience.
We've all felt like an outsider. We've all been the outsider. Star Trek is full of outsiders. And so it's amazing when those outsiders then start to come in all shapes and forms, because then no one has to feel like an outsider. Yeah. And it's true what you said, that it is hard. It is hard to realize that you're the villain in someone's story. But once you realize that, you then also come to the realization that it doesn't affect you or your story.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for me, that's something I took away from Angel, is that they don't care. You want them to, they're the villain, great. Then they're going to be the best villain. And I respect that as someone who, as a performer, I put myself out there. And when you put yourself out there, you then have to deal with how you are received and how you are perceived. I'm the only person that knows my motivations and my intentions. So I'm good. I'm good with who I am. I'm good with what I do. I know there are people out there that don't agree with me. I know there are people out there that don't like me just for being who and what I am. It does not bother me. It has in the past. And I probably have my days and my low, not probably, I do have my days and my low moments where it gets to me. And that's another reason why I think this character is really inspirational, because like, I don't care. Like, I'll be the villain. That's fine.
And I think, and I think it's important to note, like, for people who may be looking at this and struggling with the notion of being perceived as a villain or the villain, or, you know, however you want to define that. But it's important to note that it's not just a switch you flip of like, okay, I'm okay with it now. No, it's an everyday thing. Yeah. And, and you hit that. Like, there's times where I've lost sleep, I've shed tears, I've sat and just, you know, let it wash over me of, boy, this is a bummer of a situation, you know, and the next day is not so bad, you know, and the day after that's really great. And then you might come around to another bad day. You know, it happens. That is, as you so eloquently put, that's the human experience. And I think it's really important to see that the human experience is not so straight lined. It's not so narrow. There's a lot of humans. That means there's a lot of different human experiences. There's some overlap. We're all human. But day to day, you know, you get a chance to be human every day.
And I would argue, I'm very like living where I live. I am daily confronted with people that are vastly different from me. Yeah. And I love that. That's one of the reasons I love living in New York City, is that there is no same here. Everyone is different. Yeah. And what that has taught me, 15 years of living here has taught me, yes, we all have our differences. Yes, we all have our different life experiences and our different issues. But the commonalities outnumber the differences when it comes to the feeling of the experience. Like I mentioned earlier, we've all felt like an outcast in one way or another. We've all felt misunderstood. It might be over different issues, but we all know what it is to be labeled and misunderstood and misrepresented and told you're one thing when you know you're not. And that's hard to grapple with. I think being misunderstood is the worst thing for me personally. I can deal with someone not agreeing with me. I can deal with someone having a different point of view. But when I'm doing my best to share myself and it's just being misunderstood and misconstrued and not being received in the way I'm giving it, that's frustrating. Like, that is the biggest frustration. That's the hardest thing to let go of. And that's one of the things that I think Angel shows, and that she even tries to give to Spock, that when he asks the question, well, then what? Who am I then? And they respond, that's not my question to answer.
Yeah.
And that's such an amazing thing to be told. And, you know, I think everyone needs to hear that at some point in their life, that it's no one's place to tell you who you are. Mm-hmm. It's no one's place to tell you you're the villain. Maybe you're their villain. That doesn't make you a villain. And again, it's just like, none of this was necessary. None of these layers upon layers of insight and deep diving into this experience of life were necessary for this story to be told. But it is necessary for those things to be said in order to open minds. And at the end of the day, I do think that's what Star Trek's mission statement is. And I just love that they're doing it while also telling fun stories, creating fun characters, and making you think.
Yes.
Because that's what Star Trek is when it's at its best. Is it's showing us the better way. And I feel like I've definitely said that before. I might have said it on my last appearance here. I think Star Trek is our map to that future.
Yeah.
It's like, until we are that, we won't be that.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. There's a couple of other little tidbits. We could, the outpouring of love for this episode could go on all night long. But I do actually have a couple of other things that I want to talk about in terms of some of the production, some of the behind the scenes type stuff. Let's talk about, you know, as Angel is pulling the wool over our eyes, or pulling the wool from our eyes, depending on your point of view, on the Enterprise, we've got the away team, Pike, Una, Ortegas, Mbenga. We got a lot of people. Actually, they're currently not an away team.
I don't think you can call my captives an away team. They weren't there by choice.
Yeah,
there was an initial away team because they believed that was the colonist ship. They didn't realize they were boarding the Serene Squall. And the only reason I was like, wait, that's not what happened, because I just remember Rebecca Ramond's face when she's in that corridor being, you can tell that she so badly wants to do something. She's like, she knows it's not the time. She's a smart cookie.
Yeah.
And she knows she knows, like, it's not just me, it's the crew. We're going to get this. But I do love that. I love Rebecca Ramond as number one.
She's so great.
Yeah. Chen Riley. Oh my God. And this episode is like, it's not her episode by any means.
Yeah.
But there are some really good moments. I mean, like I said, there's good moments for a lot of the cast, but that there's something about that steely eyed look she gives to Spock. And at this point, we still believe Dr. Aspen.
Right.
Where she's like, not now. Like,
yeah,
we won't win here.
Yeah. It was very much a, like, I see you. I read it.
Like, and I'll probably like a relief of like, oh, thank God there's someone. She's like, okay, I can just bide my time.
Right. I very much read it as like, stay
there was an unspoken between her and Spock, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I love that. It's another example of like, that's why we love this crew. That's why we love these shows, because they show us teamwork, collaboration. It's not just about the one person having to do it all. It's about trusting that the person next to you has your back.
Yes.
I still, to this day, am trying to unpack why Angel jumped in front of that phaser blast. Was it to bring out a protector in him? Because I don't even feel that was necessary. He was already doing it.
Yeah, that's true.
But does it show a little bit of her true nature of like, she actually does not, I feel like she's one of those people that wouldn't want to take a life that she didn't need to take.
Mm, mm-hmm. Yeah. If it doesn't serve her goals.
Spock, yeah. She could have killed Spock so many times and she'd have gotten what she wanted with him dead or alive. She really didn't want to kill him. Say what you want. I don't think she's a cold-blooded murderer.
Right, right.
So even she, in her own way, shows this better, like, this better thinking.
Yeah, yeah.
Protecting the person who, we don't know that she's not on the same side as them, but in that moment, they are on the same side.
Yeah, and let's look at better thinking for a moment here in Pike, in orchestrating this mutiny. Through food. Like, that's kind of like the main drive of his thing. What are your thoughts on the plan as it works out over on the Serene Squall between Pike and the rest of
and the pirates
over there? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I love everything about that whole plot line. I also loved, like, one of the things I wanted to point out when we got here was the moments between him and Una. In the cage when she knows what he's thinking.
She's like,
oh. And it's like, I love those moments of like, you see that these people know each other so well, and they work together so well. And it reminded me of like, we've had that with Tom and Harry. We've had it with Geordi and Data.
Yeah.
We had it, you know, with O'Brien and Bashir. And it's so cool. Like, I love the Trek buddies. Like, every series has them. Most series have like more than one. It's like, you have that friendship, you have this friendship. And I genuinely really love Pike and Una's chemistry as a captain and first officer.
Yeah.
I love that she, you know, she tells him when it's too much and she calls it, but she'll still follow him. She's like, oh God.
Yeah.
Great. Here we go. And but she still gives it her all. And I do love that it's his cooking.
Yeah.
Because it's like, it's not always going to be the brawn. It's not always going to be the brains. It might be a skill that you don't even realize is important. but like it's so established that Pike can cook. Yeah. And I love that that ended up being such a crucial part of this. And I'm going to go ahead and call it the Orion pirate that's posing as the captain.
Yeah.
He is just, I feel like he is a offshoot of Neelix. He is who Neelix would have been if Neelix were an Orion pirate. He's like doing his best, trying his hardest. No one likes his food. I felt so bad for him. But at the same time, I was like, well, bad food is bad food. I'm a Taurus. Yeah. We love our food. And so, yeah, there's many things I'm nice about. But if you make me something and I don't like it, I will tell you.
And so, I kind of want to get into the background of some of these background players and the folks that we champion every episode, in addition to folks in front of the camera, folks behind the camera as well. So as we do every week, we always ask the question, who do we blame? So this episode was written by Bo DeMeo and Sarah Tarkoff. Now, the last thing we saw Bo on was season 1, episode 4, Memento Mori, which we discussed with podcaster and game master Drew Burris back on episode 122. And Sarah Tarkoff, yeah.
Can I get a refresher?
Yeah.
I know that name.
Bo DeMeo? Oh, Memento Mori? That is the one where it's their first kind of encounter with the Borg. They're celebrating. It's where everybody has like the pin of their previous service on their
You said Borg, my love.
Did I say Borg?
You meant Gorn.
The Gorn.
That's a hard part right in there, nephew.
That's what I thought. I thought it was that episode, and I just wanted to be sure because that says to me that, yeah, it's like these are the writers that do the best, like just great character work. Because the character work on La'an in that episode is insane.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah.
Okay. So I just wanted to like,
no, yeah, you're absolutely right.
You can cut that out. I just wanted to know for me.
Sarah Tarkoff's last work was on season 1, episode 2, Children of the Comet, which is a really fascinating look at a new life in a new civilization. And, you know, speaking of religious folks and religious fanatics and having their reasons that they do things, good or bad, depending on your perspective and things like that. That is a wonderful episode, and I would love to deep dive into that sometime with potentially some theologians that I've made contact with during the course of my production of my little show here. This episode was directed by Sydney Freeland. Sydney was born in Gallup, New Mexico. Her mother's Scottish and her father's Navajo, and we'll circle around back to that in a few minutes. Freeland attended the Academy of Art University in San Francisco. She is a Fulbright scholar, focusing her scholarship on a field of study in the Ecuadorian indigenous people. She has a master's of fine art in film and a bachelor of fine arts in computer animation. Now, in 2007, Freeland received the Disney scholarship and a year later became a semi-finalist in the Disney Fellowship Program. We'll circle back around to the House of Mouse later as well. So early on, she worked as a production assistant, writer, camera intern. Freeland also worked for various companies, including Food Network, Disney, Comedy Central, and Nat Geo. She successfully crowdfunded a short film inspired by Back to the Future 2 before her first feature-length effort, Drunk Town's Finest. And if you're listening, I've included a link to that short film. It's on YouTube, but check that out. It's a lot of fun. It's called Hoverboard. She would work primarily directing television for the next few years on Grey's Anatomy, Fear the Walking Dead, Nancy Drew, and two episodes of FX's Reservation Dogs. She also wrote 7 episodes of the same series. Now, this is her only work in the franchise so far. And currently, here's where we're circling back around to all those stuff we mentioned earlier. You can see her work on 4 episodes of Marvel's Native American female-driven series, Echo, on Disney+. Have you watched Echo?
I have not. I'm behind on my Marvel.
I'll be honest. Like, I was familiar with the character of Echo from the Daredevil comics, like early 2000s. And it is a different take on the character, but it is a beautiful series. I won't spend a lot of time, but just you're in for a really unique, beautiful trip and exploring a people that I was not as familiar with and a character that has a very, very rich background. So guest stars, of course, returning, we have Gia Sandhu as T'Pring, who she's appeared a couple times and has killed it every single time she's on screen. She's so wonderful. And of course, we have Jesse James Keitel as Dr. Aspen, Captain Angel. We've showered her with love and praise already.
She actually has reached out to me a couple of times. I've posted my Captain Angel costume tribute, performance tribute online.
Yeah.
And she sent me messages, commented. She's so warm to me, sharing the character in a way. Yeah. Not that, like, it's her character. I'm just, you know, paying homage. But that just always touches me anytime. And I've had the best luck with the Trek actors that I perform their characters as. I've had nothing but positive reaction and really great feedback. But I just wanted to give her a shout out just for how, you know, it's hard not to be territorial as an actor or as a performer about something you've done.
Of course.
And I just really appreciate that. Cause I did Captain Angel, that episode was barely cooled down and I was on stage, immediately. And she was just kill it, do it, love it. Yes. So I literally cannot praise her enough, as much as we have already. I cannot say enough nice things about her. I cannot wait to one day, I'm speaking this into existence. I cannot wait to present my Captain Angel to her in person.
Yes. Oh, I hope I'm somewhere close by to witness.
I'll make sure you know about it.
Yes.
But no, I just wanted to give her a true shout out and thank her. Jesse, if you're listening, I love you.
We adore you here on the show. If you have any sort of inkling to come on and chat with us for a little bit, we are dying to have a discussion with you about your Star Trek experience, about your life experience, about your career. Yes, please. Jesse James Keitel, if you are within earshot of us, please, we love you so much. Thank you.
I may request to be a part of that episode if it happens, just so you can sort of throw my hat in the ring or my wig, course, as I may.
So Jesse James Keitel graduated from Pace University with a BFA in acting in 2015. After college, she performed in the NYC drag scene, as Flip mentioned earlier, with the stage name Peroxide. Did you ever see Peroxide perform?
I did. There was a bar in Brooklyn called TNT.
Mm.
It's closed down now, which is, I loved that bar. I miss it. And yeah, our paths never truly crossed, but the drag scene in New York is small enough that peripherally we were ships in the night a couple of times. But yeah.
And before this episode of Strange New Worlds, she played Ruthie O'Neill in 8 episodes of Queer as Folk. And in 20 episodes of Big Sky, she appeared as Jerry Kennedy. But yeah, I feel like she's at the cusp of bigger, better things. You know, we Trekkers tend to not think that there is anything bigger and better than Star Trek. But you know what? I can't wait to see her in anything. She is captivating. I'm going to be on the lookout for more from Jesse James Keitel. And
I agree with you, Jesse James Keitel. That star is rising. Mm. And I'm just grateful that we got our little Trekkie hands on her when we did.
Yes.
So that the caliber of actors in Star Trek period is insane right now.
Yes.
You know, Michelle Yeoh moving on to become an Oscar winner and still to headline a Star Trek film is it really does. I do hate that sci-fi is somewhat snubbed in the industry sometimes.
Yeah.
And the actors aren't always given the praise they deserve for the work they're doing because it's just seen as alien stuff. But it's the fact that we have these caliber of actors and someone like Jesse James Keitel adding to the richness and to the tapestry of Star Trek is just, we're being spoiled, and I love it so much.
There is, now typically I would stop the who do we blame section there, but there is one more person that I want to give a shout out to. There is true artistry in every department. And I, shame on me as a producer and host of this show that this is the first, I've taken a lot of shots to the head. Maybe I've done it before or not, but this is the first director of photography that we're going to talk about, Glenn Keenan. And the reason I want to mention Glenn Keenan and his work with the camera, that shootout scene on the bridge, there is a point where Spock dodges one of the phaser beams and the camera moves simultaneously with him. And I thought that was such a brilliant move to put the viewer on the bridge and quite literally next to Spock, in that our point of view leans over with Spock. Shooting an action sequence is a lot tougher than people probably give it credit for. If you want to see a really well shot action sequence, 1987, the first Predator movie, where Dutch and his team infiltrate that that group of bad guys there in the forest. Watch the cuts and watch the angles that they use to show not only their infiltration and defeat of this guerrilla army, but how they also have each other's backs and stuff is happening in multiple different places. And you will see the type of artistry and meticulous planning it takes to shoot a good action sequence. So Glenn Keenan, thank you so much for churning out a great action sequence. That is a fantastic shootout on the bridge.
And not just that one, there's the fight scene that Chapel does in the corridor. It's just her, but like that, it's beautifully shot. And the yes. way that they, and like I said, at this point, we haven't seen Christine in much action. We know she's had it from the Klingon War, but this was before that episode. And you know which one I'm talking about, where they really dive deep into her time in the Klingon War. We got to see that. But like that scene alone, the way that they show that, she even says, she's like, I'm not a fighter. And I was like, girl, then what is it dancing for you? Like, what do you call it? Because you're doing it. And the way it's shot is so, it's so fast, but nothing's missed. No beat is missed. The cinematography on this episode fits it again. It's like how the wardrobe fits the story perfectly. The writing fits the characters perfectly. The cinematography, the way there is not one shot that is a waste. It's like,
yeah, there is. I would be surprised if there's anything on the cutting room floor. I mean, I know you have to, you know, trim here and there.
Oh, I'm sure there is. And I'm sure if we saw it, we'd be mad that it didn't make the episode.
I know.
it just cut for time.
Yeah, exactly. Because
especially when you have actors like this, like, don't even get into like improvising, ad libs. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
The way that Angel, and I know that here I am again, but like the way Angel is written, the one liners, who has ever just sat in the captain's chair and fired a phaser just to fire a phaser and then acknowledge, like, she lets out that belly laugh.
Yes.
Of like, that's what I want to see. I want to see the people on the screen having as much fun as I'm having watching it.
Yes.
And that's what Strange New Worlds gives us. You feel like they're having fun.
Oh,
like
for
it's
sure.
a crazy job. Someone has to do it. And why the hell not have a good time while doing it?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, this episode is pretty important. And I think I know the answer to this next question before I even ask it. But I'm going to do my part and ask, is this essential viewing? If somebody is sitting down and working their way through Star Trek for the very first time, and they come to this episode, The Serene Squall, is this an episode that they can skip? Or is this a must-see episode?
Honestly, I think for the Spock storyline alone, it is essential viewing.
Mm-hmm.
The work that has gone into exploring where he is with his navigating being Vulcan human.
Yeah.
A lot of that is unpacked here. I think anyone who is a fan of the original series and was as captured as I was by Nurse Chapel's fascination with Spock.
Mm.
I love that in Strange New Worlds, we're seeing it wasn't always a one-sided relationship. In TOS, it is shown as an unrequited love. And not to jump too far ahead into season two of Strange New Worlds, because I know you guys aren't there yet.
Mm.
But through there, we are seeing that this relationship was more complicated than we thought.
Oh, yeah.
Stuff happened we didn't know about.
Yeah.
And it colors what you see in TOS. I'm so interested, because you're doing this chronologically, I'm so interested in maybe coming back to talk about some of that if I'm lucky enough to be on here again.
Oh, don't even play like that. Come on.
Where we can explore Majel Barrett's Nurse Chapel, having Jess Bush's Nurse Chapel as information. Because it really does change. As a performer who's always channeling these female characters as a drag queen, I'm always fascinated by how Strange New Worlds is informing TOS's characters. Like, we never knew the things Uhura had struggled with in her youth, and now we do. The loss of her family. It makes sense. It's like that someone who would choose Starfleet as, like, she needs a family.
Yeah.
So now she's built the family. She's built the Enterprise crew family. And that changes. I do feel like when you watch Nichelle Nichols and you think of that as the character's backstory, it changes things a little bit. It adds a depth and shades that unfortunately we just didn't get due to the focus being on the main three in TOS. Yeah. We didn't get as much from the ensemble. So I'm glad those characters now get to have fuller lives. So back to your question, for Spock and Nurse Chapel alone, I do think this is essential viewing. And then, pirates and ship takeovers and this amazing new nemesis. Like, I hate calling them a villain because I just love them so much. But you know what? It's fine. I can love them and they can be a villain. And for Captain Angel, like, that's just an interesting character. If you are going to look at some great Star Trek villains, the work that they were able to do in one episode, that's why I'm like, oh, please bring this character back. Please let us see more. I would love a storyline involving Spock's brother if they want to do that as well. If they just want it to be Angel, I'm fine with that.
Right. I think, and this may come across as a hot take, but there is a method to my madness here. Narratively, without the scene and without the revelation that Captain Angel's lover is Cybok, Spock's brother, without that, narratively, this could be a skippable episode. If you are following the track of Spock specifically, which, you know, is a great one, a lot of people are, this is definitely a pivotal moment in his journey of discovery of himself, of getting this fresh perspective, of exploring a relationship and the fallout from exploring that relationship with Nurse Chapel. So, but again, because we do have that scene, we do have that explanation, this is bigger than just, it's definitely not a filler episode. This is a must watch episode for sure. We're on the same page for sure. For sure. So
I also love, like, I didn't know where you were going when you were like, if you remove the Cybok connection, because that made me realize, like, you are completely correct. Like, if you remove that, it's just a pirate episode. It's still a great episode, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Still great
episode. I love that sometimes, especially female characters or femme presenting characters are often defined by their romantic lead, quote unquote. I love that they did kind of do that in a way, but not, because if you take Cybok out of this, that character, Angel, still stands.
Oh, yeah.
It's just kind of like a bonus.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, oh, yeah, this character that we just introduced you to that we all know that we're all loving also is dating Spock's brother.
Yeah, it's
like a cherry. It's
a cherry on top. Yep.
Exactly. It's I love that because it's such a brilliant way of, like,
we love this character and we have a pretty good idea that you love this character, but wait, there's more.
Ding. It's like, let's actually solidly entrench this character.
Yeah.
Within, it's like That's why I'm like, if we don't see more from this character, that's crazy to me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
It would be such a missed opportunity.
Yeah, for sure.
Just due to how great the casting was, how great the character is played.
That list is extensive of reasons we need to see her again.
It would be like never having Seska back. It's like, there's a reason why that character came back. It's because when it's good, it's good.
Yeah. And, you know, things are good whenever you're here with us, Flip. We can't wait to have you back for either another episode of Strange New Worlds or for anything else we might be secretly planning down the line. I'd like to say more, but I don't want to spoil the surprise. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for coming on and nerding out with us again. Parting thoughts. Any other final thoughts about this episode, Strange New Worlds, the franchise as a whole, another experience here on Computer Resume Podcast. Any parting thoughts before we go?
I guess my only parting thoughts are I begin to reflect on where Star Trek is right now, where it's going. And I'm just so excited to be here for this.
Yeah.
We have so much coming up on the horizon. We've been dealt some blows. You know, the climate is unsure.
Yeah.
But I'm glad to know that we have at least 2 years of Strange New Worlds coming for sure. I'm really enjoying Discovery's final season.
Yeah.
I hate that it's ending, but if it is ending, it looks like they're really sending it off with a bang. I'm going to be honest, watching Discovery right now, first watch, is starting to feel the way season 3 of Picard felt.
Mm.
Like each episode is really meeting and exceeding my expectations.
Yeah.
And I'm like I'm just really grateful to be a Trekkie who's present to watch this chapter of Star Trek.
Yes.
And I'm excited to see where it's going, and I'm just glad to be along for the ride.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're so happy to sit next to you on this wonderful, wonderful ride. Well, folks, in 2 weeks on May 13th, we will have a very special episode as we discuss our first Star Trek novel, Star Trek, Strange New Worlds, The High Country. Not only will we be covering this unique chapter, see what I did there, we'll be covering it with its author, John Jackson Miller. Trust me, you are not going to want to miss this episode. So Flip, where can people find you in New York City? And where might they else find you in the not too distant future?
Well, to all of my New York City Trekkies, if you are listening, you can find me currently co-hosting regularly at a little bar in Chelsea called Barracuda for a Star Trek Discovery viewing event. It's put on every week. I am an every other week co-host. We do trivia, bingo, themed performances, and it's all to raise money for charity, to support good causes, to get together, celebrate Star Trek, and have a good time. You can find the information for that across my social media platforms. I am on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, X, Twitter, whatever you want to call it, and Facebook as Flip Kiki. It's FLIPPEKIKEE. You can also tip me on Venmo. Like, I have videos of performances posted, so if you're like, oh, I wish I'd have been there, I wish I could have tipped her, you can. Isn't that wonderful, the age of technology we live in?
We
normally
are...
wouldn't do that, but I'm dressed as a pirate, so I'm like, give me your money.
We are truly in the Jetsons like future.
Right. And lastly, in a few weeks, if you are going to be attending Trek Long Island, you can find little old me co-captaining a booth with none other than our amazing Todd Davis.
Yay.
Yes, I'm so excited to be joining you for that.
As if Trek Long Island couldn't get any better when you said yes to co-hosting the booth with me. I was just over the moon. I was like, this is going to be so much fun. I am just ecstatic to get there. And there's going to be some of our other Trek friends are going to be there as well. Danny Rydell, lots of fun actors. I know Melissa Navia is going to be there. Armin Shimmerman. There's a bunch. There's a lot of
Ethan
folks.
Ethan Phillips is going to be there.
Ethan Phillips is going to be so there. Excited. They've got some comic book people, Heather Antos, J.K. Woodward. The list is extensive. Go to treklongisland.com for all the details. I am at Mr. Todd A. Davis on all of the socials. From all of us at the Computer Resume podcast, thank you so much for listening. And I'll see you in Trek Long Island 2, baby, the sequel.
On Patreon and like, rate, review, and share on all your favorite platforms. Feel free to send us your subspace transmissions to computerresumepodcast@gmail.com or at Computer Resume on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. The Computer Resume podcast was created and produced by Mr. Todd A. Davis. Our logo was designed by Will Martin and Justin Bishop. The opening theme was produced by Justin Bishop, and our outro music was provided with permission by Dronode. Additional music was provided by Mr. Todd A. Davis and Gary Horn, and the voice of Computer Resume Podcast and executive producer, me, Kat Davis. Hashtag LLAP. We'll see you next time.
Going through a Star Trek. We're doing Star Trek stuff in space. We probably got some phasers and shuttle pods, and we're gonna find a brand new race.
Gregory Peck.
Ethan Peck.
Flip, I know. I'm having a brain moment. You're gonna love me in editing. Okay.
How's that for a slice of fried gold?